so bad today.
Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Beckus, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Todd.
Here it is, October 28th, and it seems like yesterday I first started with step one. I can't believe how quick this has gone. And it's been an honor, it's been a privilege to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And it's amazing, not only the benefits, just what I've learned about myself, what I've learned really in delving into the literature again, and the things that came up that either I relearned or were taught again, new things that came up. Step 11. I'm a little bit nervous at this one. I don't know why, but I'm going to bring some things in this meeting, in this format. I'm going to bring up some things that I wouldn't normally bring up at an AA meeting. Some of the ways that I meditate. Okay, so just be aware that just normally I wouldn't bring something like that. I'm not apologizing for it. I'm just saying this is what I do. I'm sharing my experience, my strength, and my hope with step 11 as I understand it. And it's really kind of hard to condense. What I found as I was preparing for the meeting, it was hard to condense everything all down in you know, the time that we have today. So I'm going to start. I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a little story about back when I was in grade school. I was in eighth grade, and we had just moved to Northeast. So I was approximately 13, maybe 14. I was somewhere in that area. I hadn't picked up a drink yet. And I went to St. Gregory's School. It's a Catholic school. And before we started class every day, we got up and we said prayers. Now, I don't know, after we moved to Northeast, it was kind of devastating for a seventh grader to move and leave all your friends. And I'm in this new school and I'm meeting new friends. And couple days, my dad came home, he announced that he had a job offer in Evansville, Indiana. And I didn't want to move to Evansville, Indiana. We just got done moving to Northeast from Erie. That was traumatic enough. And to move to a whole different state, a whole different culture, a whole different circumstance. And so I'm at this Catholic school, and we had prayers every day, and then we had petitions. And every day I would pray for the special intention not to move to Evansville. That's what it was. I just said a special intention. I didn't let anybody know what that intention was. And I don't remember how long I offered the petition. I don't remember what date. I don't remember anything like that. But I do remember the day that my dad came home and said that he decided we're not going to move. And at that moment, at that time, at that place, I was never closer to God than I was at that particular time. I knew that God existed, and I knew that He answered prayer. Because He answered my prayer, we didn't move. Jump ahead, and I picked up a drink soon after that, and life is life, and what happened. So now I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and working through the steps, and now it comes time to work step 11. And what can I say about God's will? It's just been my experience as I travel around the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that everybody loves God's will until it happens. In other words, things are going great. Things are going great. How's it going? It's going great. It's going wonderful. God's will. God loves me. God wants me to have all these great things. Well, then life happens. Then the same people that said that life was so great start bitching and complaining about their life and these things that are happening to them. So rather than thanking God for the things that are happening, they complain. And that's just been my experience. Everybody loves God's will until it happens. So when I look at that, what I got to do is I got to ask myself, what is God's will? I think about the only thing that I really know about God's will is that His will is always done. The way that I was taught, the way I understand it, God's will is either causative, where He causes things that happen, where He is the author behind things, good things that happen, or it's permissive. He allows things to happen. And at the same time, I understand what they're saying. I can understand his respective of the free will. I feel like I can intellectualize what is being said there, but I can't really understand. I can't fully comprehend when I look at the world. And I'm not here to get in a debate about anything like that. But that's what I was taught. It's either causative or permissive, God's will. And when it came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I believe there was a God. We discussed this. It bears bringing up again. I believe there was a God, but I really truly didn't believe he had wanted anything to do with me just because of the horrible life that I'd lived. So I started out to learn to pray and getting on my knees and as a sign of humbleness before a God of my understanding. What is prayer and meditation? Prayer is talking to God. And meditation is listening. And what I'm trying to do is, in step 11, is take action on the decision I made in step 3. And by means of prayer and meditation, I'm actively seeking what God wills for me every day. That's what my job, that's what I feel, that's what I'm doing with step 11. I'm seeking God's guidance throughout the day. Because my life up to that point, up to the point I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, was self-will run riot. When Todd has the reins, when Todd's trying to run things, things don't go really well, as is evidenced by my life. You know, if my life was going so well, how would I end up in Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. But because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm learning to incorporate God's will into my life. My prayer life started out real, real, real simple. I would get up in the morning and I would say, help. That's what I was taught. Because I really, truly didn't believe that prayer was going to work for me. I really, truly didn't believe that I was worthy. So that's how my prayer started. Old timers, that's what they used to talk about back then. And I still talk about it today. Getting up and asking for help. And I didn't necessarily do it on my knees to start with. And I learned to get on my knees by putting my cigarettes under the bed. Before I went to bed at night, I was on my knees shoving them under. And I'd say, hey, thank you. When I get up, I'd have to reach down and grab them. So I was on my knees, I'd say, help. That's how my prayer life started. It started out real, real, real simple. And it progressed throughout the years. It just progressed throughout the years. I learned a little things here, a few things there. And the big book, in step 10, after step 10, it tells me that I have entered in the world of the Spirit. Now, what does that mean? My definition of that is, I'm spiritual. It just simply means I'm trying to discern what God's will is for me. I rely less on my own will and more on God's will. It's just that simple for me. And again, the things that I express up here today are my opinions. Take it or leave it. I'm not here speaking on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous. Just speaking on behalf of my experience. When I did some research on this, I used the big book. I think I love the big book for, especially the last, from step 7 through 12. It does a great job of explaining and tell you how to work the steps. So I really relied heavily on the big book, and I did pull out a few things from the 12 and 12. The 12 and 12 tells me that prayer and meditation are the principal means of a conscious contact with the God of my understanding. And I learned how to do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Growing up, I was brought up in the Catholic Church, and there's absolutely positively nothing the matter with that. But I had a child's understanding of a relationship with God. I didn't really have a relationship with God. If you be a good boy, you're going to get good things. If you listen, you're going to get good things. That's kind of the way that I was brought up. That's the way I understood it. So when it came time to form a relationship, what I had to do was forget everything I thought I knew about God and seek. And that's what I was doing in Alcoholics Anonymous, seeking a conscious contact with the God of my understanding through the 12 steps. And my prayer life and meditation are so important to me. If I don't start out my day with prayer and meditation, I'm real off. I'm off kilter. It's kind of like not... waking up and taking a shower. I can make it throughout the day, but it just something just isn't right. I don't feel quite right. I don't feel clean, for lack of a better word. I don't feel like my day goes as well as it does when I start out with a prayer meditation and conscious contact with the God of my understanding. I love this statement from the 12 and 12. It says, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. How true that is. And for the same reason. When we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. When I forget or don't pray or meditate or start my day out with prayer and meditation, I suffer. I truly do suffer. I'm just not right. I like to equate it to, and there's not too many days. In fact, I tell you, I don't remember the last time I didn't start out with at least some sort of a prayer. But when I don't, do you ever watch a cartoon where you hear the voice and then you see the mouth move? That's kind of like how my day goes. I'm just not in sync. I'm just something is off. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As I said earlier, trying to live life on life's terms with self-will got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. By making a conscious contact and having a relationship, that is so important, that word, relationship. Having a relationship with the God of my understanding. That's what I'm establishing in Alcoholics Anonymous, with the God of my understanding. I'm having a relationship with Him. It's not about, hey God, give me this, hey God, give me that, hey God, this, hey God, that. The God of my understanding today, I have a relationship with. We get up and we talk to each other. I talk to Him, He talks to me in the morning. I try to get in tune, try to seek what He wants me to do that day. And I'm here to tell you, I do have a conscious contact with God of my understanding. Those little voices in my head, and it's not the voices that you think. When I pray, I get sometimes this little voice in my head. It directs me, for lack of a better word. I get directed, but I have a relationship not only when things are going good. Not only when things are going good, I have a relationship with the God of my understanding when my life is challenging. When life is challenging, I still have the same relationship with the God of my understanding. I still get on my knees and ask the God of my understanding for help, and I get on my knees and I say thank you at night. And not just when things are going good. That's not what the relationship's about. That's what I've learned. That's the difference between my life with prayer growing up when I was a child and my life in Alcoholics Anonymous today with this relationship. I have a true one-on-one relationship with the God of my understanding. And I do that through prayer and meditation. And when I incorporate that into my life, it's just amazing. It's amazing the things that have happened. The places I've been, the people that are put into my path. It's amazing. It's wonderful. It's beyond my ability to describe. I wish I could put it into words. I wish I had time to tell you about everything, but I don't. I don't. The big book suggests prayer and meditation. We're told we shouldn't be shy in this matter. Better men than us are using it constantly. I talk to my fellow members of Alcoholics Anonymous about how God works in your life. I love doing that. I love hearing your stories about how God works in your life. I love hearing one of my they tell us not to have heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I have a buddy. His name was Paul Bajoric, and Paul is from Titusville. And when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I met Paul in 1991. At that time, he was diagnosed with cancer. He had a cancerous kidney. They removed it. And he lived a productive life for 18 years. And at that time, he found he had cancer. His wife left him. He lost his job. Lost his house. He lost everything. End up living with his mother. And you know what the example that he set for me was? He still went to meetings. He still had his hand out for the sick and suffering alcoholic. And never once did he curse God, at least when I was there. He never once cursed God. He was always upbeat, no matter what. He was always upbeat. It was always a pleasure to see him. I look at him, and that's an example for me. You know, who the heck am I to feel sorry for myself when life happens? You know, is it God's will? If I believe that God's will is permissive for me, and he permits those things to happen, I get through it. He provides a means and for me to get through tough situations. He puts right people in my path to get me through those situations. And we talked a little bit last week about my relationship with my wife and then my relationship with my daughter. I didn't do that myself. I didn't go through that myself. God knew what I needed, and he put the right people in my path to talk me and to guide me through, to tell me what happened to them. I really, truly believe that. Had I handled that situation by myself, I promise you, I probably wouldn't be married today, and I wouldn't have a relationship I have with my daughter today. And that's how God works in my life. The big book, I don't like the part where I think it belongs with step 10, where it says we retire at night. When I retire at night, I don't necessarily have a conscious contact with God. I understand it. It's when that didn't sound quite right. When I retire at night, I look at my day. I take an inventory of myself. I do say a prayer, and I thank God for this wonderful day, no matter what happens. If I go to bed sober at night, it's been a good day, no matter what happens. And I've had some tough times. There's been some tough times in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not as bad as some, maybe a little more than others, but it hasn't been peaches and cream. It hasn't been unicorns and rainbows. As I love to say, it hasn't been Hunky Dory Anonymous. But you know what? It's been life on life's terms, and we got through it. The part that is important to me, where it talks about upon awaking, we think about the 24 hours ahead. We ask God to direct our thinking. Yeah, I do that. I do that. Help me get through the day. Seek God's will. Ask that we divorce from self-pity. You know what? I ask that. Just because I ask it doesn't mean that it goes away. Understand that. I am allowed to partake in self-pity. not willingly. It just happens. You know, I had to apologize twice a week at work because, damn it, I got caught up in some self-pity. But at least I was able, I knew I had the means to take care of that. I had the means to go back and set it right and to sweep my side of the street clean. Divorce from dishonesty, for the most part. I'm a very honest person today. I get up in the morning and ask God to help me to be honest. Divorce my thinking from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. You know what? I'm human, and I got to remember that. I'm going to fail. But the important thing is that I get up and I continue to move on. I think it's important that we know that we're human beings, and as human beings, we aren't going to do this perfectly. I remember one time early in sobriety where I was at work and I got my left and my right screwed up and I made some non-conforming parts. And I knew that I did that. I caught it like, oh no. And part of me wanted to take and ignore that and not say anything, just pretend like, oh, I didn't realize it, but I did. See, I'm starting to get a conscience back. And I walked up to my boss and I had my head hung and I said, Jerry, I screwed up. I got my left and my right screwed up. And he said, well, let's call the engineering department and see if they could use them, because they were kind of a symmetrical type of a part. And you know what? We called and we were able to use them. I really beat myself up over that because, God forbid, I made a mistake. God forbid I made a mistake. And I called, remember, I called my sponsor, Jim, and I said, Jim, I screwed up at work. I made a mistake. He said, those other guys that work there, they make mistakes. I thought about this really experienced machinist that worked there, and he was a great guy. If you know anything about machining, when you use a 1-inch tap in a hole, you drill it smaller because the teeth in the tap it taps it to 1 inch. Well, he took and he drilled a 1-inch hole, so that tap went right into the hole. That was pretty major. Yeah. And I thought about that. I thought, yeah, I guess they do, Jim. I guess they do. And I'm not saying that took care of everything, but I realized that everybody is human. And I need to remember that. I need to remember that I'm human as well. that God allows me to be human. I don't have to be perfect. And I still need to watch my motives. What does God want from me? What do you want me to do? And it's so easy to manipulate and con myself into thinking that something that I really, really want is God's will. I do have a guy. Oh my gosh. A guy named Dan. Dan S. And you know who I'm talking about. Jim used to hang around Jim Nelson quite a bit. He told the judge he thought it was God's will for him to steal the car and he got off. I thought he was crazy. He knew what he was doing. He knew exactly what he was doing. That's what I'm kind of thinking. False motives. Motives to manipulate to get what I want. You know, I know better today. I know better. How do I start my morning? When I get up, I love to get up early. I'm up quite early. I love to make a cup of coffee and I like to sit down. And if, this isn't necessarily in this order, but this is what I do in the morning. This is my routine. The big book talks about discipline. And believe it took a long time to get to this point. It didn't happen overnight. It has become so important for me. And if I don't do everything, it doesn't screw my day up. But at least I get part of most of everything I have written down here. That's just how I start. I get up early, make a cup of coffee, and then I might read the 24-hour book first. And what I like to do is I read it a couple times. And you know what? That doesn't matter. I still forget what I read when I walk out the door. But I like to read the 24-hour book. They have so many good meditations in their daily thoughts, and then a little prayer. I love reading the 24-hour book. Today's was so appropriate. Today is the 28th, and the meditation says we can bow to God's will in anticipation of things happening which will in the long run be the best for all concerned. It may not always seem the best thing at the present time, but we cannot see that far ahead as God can. We do not know His plans or how His plans are laid. We only need to believe that if we trust Him and accept whatever happens as His will, in a spirit of faith, everything will work out for the best in the end. And I really truly believe that. When things happen in my life, when things happen, I really truly believe I believe that God has a plan for me. And I really truly believe that when things happen to me, it's just a part of God's plan to get me where He wants me to go. I don't know where that is. I have no idea. One of my prayers in today is increase my trust, increase my trust, increase my trust. Because some things happen that I don't understand, I don't necessarily agree with, but you know, who the heck am I to question God? He does know best. Then I like to read the daily reflections. As I say, I read them twice. I love reading the daily reflections as well because there's always a good message. Then I read some AA literature, usually the big book, or I'll go on to another AA book of some sort. I'll read a couple pages from that each day. And what another part of the what I like to incorporate into my morning routine, I love to read the Bible. I make that a part of my routine just simply because it's so fascinating to read the stuff in there. That's part of my higher power, and I really truly believe that my higher power talks to me also through the Bible. And when I pray, I ask for help. And remind myself that I'm an alcoholic. I say I came to believe in a power greater than myself. You could restore me to sanity, and I make a decision every morning. I also say the 3rd, 7th, and 11th step prayers and incorporate that into my life. I incorporate the big book suggestions and I try to look at the 24 hours ahead. Plan my day. I don't necessarily plan, make plans that don't plan the results. That's where I get into trouble. When I plan the results. Expectations. Unfulfilled expectations. I still got to watch out for that. I pray for others. I have a list of names that I read off every morning. It's just I'm part of the prayer line at the church we belong to. I also have my own personal list of friends and family and people that I pray for who are going through much worse things than I'm going through. I think I got problems. All I got to do is read down that prayer line and see the names that are on there. And it really kind of puts me in perspective, puts things in a place, and it helps me to get my attitude of gratitude. And one of the things I've incorporated in my life, I talked to several AAs who also is the rosary. It's a Catholic thing. I love to pray and meditate on the mysteries of the rosary, and it talks about my higher power, and I get to go through his life with him. And that's what me. You won't hear me talk about that in an AA meeting, but in this setting, I'm talking about my experience with step 11, and that's an important part of my prayer, and especially my meditation. That's part of my meditation, to pray and meditate on the mysteries. And I love where it says in the big book, see where religious people are right, make use of what they have to offer. And I've done that over the years. I've sought. When I decided to make the decision, to go back, I went back to the Catholic Church. I kind of left for a while as I was living a life that was certainly not conducive with a Christian living. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll are more the lifestyle. But when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it came time to make a decision. I wanted to go back. I wanted to make that a part of my life. And I remember trying, my buddy and I, we would try a couple different churches and didn't really stand out. But I remember walking into, you know where the Bread of Life St. Joseph's Church is on Sassafras? It was just St. Joseph's Church at that particular time. And I walked in, and some of you may remember Father Bible. He was the rector or whatever of Cathedral Prep. And see, I used to serve Mass under Father Bible back in when I was in grade school. When I walked in, I saw Father Bible. It was God talking to me. I knew that's where I was supposed to be. And I asked Father Bible to be my spiritual advisor. And that's when I really started to grow. Not only in Alcoholics Anonymous, but in my faith and understanding of my understanding. And one of the things that Father Bible, I had obeyed it. I remember my dad, he made this thing that was called a Crucio many years ago. And he had come home that weekend, and he wanted me to make a Crucio. Well, I was 20 years old, and that was the last thing in my mind. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. So now I have Father Bible as my spiritual advisor, and we're going down. This is many years into it. We're sitting down, we're having a talk, and he looked at me and says, Todd, I want you to make a Crucio. That's how I end up doing that. But it certainly didn't hurt me. It just gave me another method of spirituality, another method at the Catholic Church. I only bring that up because once I made a Crucio, I found out that many, many people in Alcoholics Anonymous have been through that experience. There's been many times throughout my sobriety when I'm faced with doubt, indecision, agitation, or any number of negative emotions. And the big book suggests that I say to myself many times during the day, thy will be done, and I really, truly try to do that. Not only pray in the morning, I don't only pray at night, I really try to keep a conscious contact with the God of my understanding throughout the day by saying, thy will be done, not mine. Thy will be done, not mine. It tells me that I'm in much less danger of frustration, fear, and all those negative things. Doesn't mean I don't get frustrated. Doesn't mean I don't get fearful. It doesn't mean I don't have those negative emotions. They just don't last as long. When I start incorporating, trying to bring God in my life and seek His will throughout the day, it seems like those things just kind of dissipate or they become less. We're in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, work, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We don't tire so easily if we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. I have an issue with control. I don't know about you, but I have an issue with control. And I think about trying to arrange the pawns the way I want to, and it just doesn't work. And I relate so well to that. Or much less danger, excitement, fear, anger, when I'm not trying to arrange life to suit me, when I'm just letting life happen, my life goes so much easier. When I'm seeking God's will and trying to, really, really trying to do God's will, my life goes so much easier. It works, it really does. And one of the things, one of the beautiful things about Alcoholics Anonymous is my wife and I, we do pray together at night. And one of the last things we do is we'll lay down there and we'll hold each other and just say a little prayer. And I really enjoy that. I really think that's special. I really love that. We tried to meditate together. She has this, especially with the Zoom, there's a place that she goes that called Sangha. And she let me try it with her. The only problem was every time we were in there meditating, it was for 20 minutes, I ended up sacking out and snoring and to wake her up and screw her meditating up. So we don't meditate too well together. At least for that long a period of time. But we've been known to put on a meditation tape and meditate together. And what a beautiful thing that is, to be able to do that with your spouse. I have a few things down here that I want to talk about. Jim says, Jim dying. I remember when my sponsor passed away, my first sponsor. I was about 5 years sober, and there was a lot of stuff going on at that particular time. My mom had a brain tumor, didn't know if she was going to live or not. Work wasn't going the greatest, and I was just so fearful of losing my job. So I built this fear just building up. And Jim passed away. It just started to compound and get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the problem was I wasn't talking to anybody. Jim was the only one that I talked to. And I remember distinctly being too afraid not to pray, being too afraid not to go to meetings. So what I'm saying is I kept up that relationship with God and my understanding. It was a really difficult time. It was really a difficult time. But one day at a time, we worked through it. And the lesson that God taught me from all that, I mean, God didn't take Jim, it was just his time. But the lesson I learned from all that was I need to let more people into my life. I can't just have one person that knows about me. I can't have just one person that I talk to. I can't have one person that I'm only intimate on a gut level talking with. I can't do that. And so after that, once I started to come out of that, I have more than one. I have several people who know me. Because life happens. You never know when somebody's going to be gone. You never know when somebody's not going to be available. And I need to have somebody to talk. Sometimes just things happen. Life happens. I need somebody to talk to. So that's the lesson I learned from that. And I believe I talked about this before. I'm going to talk about it again. I stayed out of relationship for a long time. And I got into this relationship, and it was a pretty good relationship to start out with. And I guess after about a year, things kind of went sour. I don't understand what happened. All I know is that it went bad. And I didn't handle it too well. I truly didn't handle it real well. But one of the things I did was stick close to my sponsor. And you know what? Praying and meditating and trying not to be so angry, trying not to act out, trying to maintain. I was smart enough to listen to him. And what he had suggested was I stay out of Northeast for a little while until I could get a grip on what was happening. Because I was certainly not mature enough to handle what was happening that particular time. You talk about self-pity, I was just so full of self-pity. And I didn't realize, I couldn't tell you that back then. I would say something different, but really look back on it now, it was just nothing more than me being full of self-pity. And once I stayed away and again through prayer and meditation and the conscious contact with God and my understanding, I was able to accept it for what it was and then move on. And I think about that. I truly, truly think about that. And I look, because I remember when it first happened, all I wanted was that relationship back. That's all I wanted. And we had talked about earlier about not going with the 24 hour book about God knows what's best. He can see far ahead. At that particular time, it was horrible what happened. It really hurt. It really hurt. Had I got what I wanted, I would have never been with my wife. It's just a godsend. I look at my wife as a godsend. I really, truly mean that. Had I got what I wanted and not let God's plan fall through, I don't know where I'd be at today. See, it just proves I don't know what's good for me. It just proves when I follow God's plan, things work out for the best in the long run. It might be hell in the hallway, but God puts a window there somewhere for me to get out. That's just been my experience. There was a campground in Cook's Forest called Camp Sunlight. And I got invited there for a conference one year, and I met a gentleman by the name of Frank Zach. When I met Frank, Frank had about 47 years of sobriety. He was just this kind, gentle, loving old man. And we really hit it off well. And Frank, started to come up to our retreats. And I remember when he had his 50th anniversary, how we had a cake for him at the retreat. But I got to see Frank as a human being. He really didn't want to make a big deal about all the time he had. He said, if I could give 25 years to somebody else, I'd do it. I understand what he was saying, because people really made a big deal and kind of put him way up on a pedestal. He wouldn't let me do that. He wouldn't let me do that. And I got to be really close to Frank. I used to, on the weekends, I'd get off work and I'd drive down and I'd spend weekends with him. And we'd go to meetings, we'd go to dinner. We just had a really good time. And this particular year, now this was 2001, it actually was right around the time where that relationship was kind of going bad. I went down to visit Frank. This was March, and this weekend was just one of those weekends where it was absolutely gorgeous out. It was in the 80s. This is down in Pittsburgh. It was in the 80s all weekend. Just kind of weather you walk around without your shirt on. You know, we had a friend down in Claysville named John who had lost his wife that February. And I went down to Frank's. We went to dinner, met John for dinner, and we all three went to a meeting. Now, Frank never told me what to do. But he says, Todd, he says, I want you to go. I want you to spend the night with John. He lost his wife, and I'll catch up with you guys tomorrow. I said, okay, Frank. So we go back to Frank's house. I grab my gear, and I go to run out, go into John's car. As I'm walking out, Frank passed me. He says, hold on, I'm going with you. And we all went down to John's house. There was an 86-year-old man, a 56-year-old man, and a 36-year-old man. And there was no age difference between us. We had a wonderful weekend. What a fantastic weekend that was. Again, it was one of those weekends where it was in the 80s. We were going to meetings, going to dinner, enjoying each other's company. And why do I tell you that? Because Frank passed away about 2 months after that. I mean, he was 87 years old. It certainly wasn't unexpected that he was going to pass away sometime. But I look back at that weekend, and I'm so glad that I listened and went down and spent the weekend with Frank that weekend. Because I have a memory in me that it's priceless. That's something you can't put a price tag on. I'll never get that moment back. I'll never be able to recreate that moment. But it's things like that, by praying and meditating and trying to do God's will, getting out of myself, putting myself out there, trying to be a service, God gives me those little gifts. And I'm looking at the time. I didn't think I'd be able to go this long tonight. I want to thank you people for listening to me tonight. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Todd. So now we'll open things up for questions and answers. So if you're here in the room, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll get you the microphone. If you're on Zoom, go ahead and unmute yourself and speak up whenever you have a chance. So who would like to get us started?
Oh my God! You were waiting. You were hovering, waiting for me. That's wow. Anyway, thank you so much, Todd. I enjoyed listening to you share your experience in Strength and Hope on Step 11, and the way you wove the religiosity informs the spirituality, and vice versa. Gives you, it's that's how it's hit my ear. The religiosity gave you a way to express the spirituality that we hope to come to in AA. And there's a lot of ways to get to that place, and that you found a way that worked for you, and that was very clear. So I want to thank you for saying that, you know, explaining that. But anyway, this is kind of old school and maybe off the wall, so I'm going to ask this anyway, okay? no one's going to stop me anyway, right? But, you know, I got sober in Pittsburgh, and in Pittsburgh there was kind of, at that time to me, it was rather a mysterious group of men that called themselves the Calix. And that was the Catholic Alcoholics, and they had these separate little confabs that I wasn't invited to because I don't know if it was a men's thing, but it was definitely Catholics and alcoholics, like 12-step alcoholics, somehow like weaving this together. And I was wondering if you had any participation in that. Have you ever heard of any such a thing? Is there such a thing in Erie? That's my question.
Okay. Thank you, Leslie. Leslie had asked if there's a Catholic organization with alcoholics.
It was called Calix.
Calix. My experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, just my experience. It's what I've grown into. Again, this is based on about 31 years of experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I am at an AA meeting, I don't talk about my religious life. That just doesn't belong in Alcoholics Anonymous. I truly don't believe. Doesn't mean we don't talk about God. Don't misunderstand me. I don't say we talk about God in here. If God scares you out, the bottle will bring you back. That's what I was taught. That's what I believe. But when you get down to doctrine, to religion, I don't believe it belongs in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's just my personal feeling. But I'm very strong with my religion. But my religious life is separate. When I'm at church, I don't talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. Hey, people know that I'm in only because We go to meetings at our church, and we have no anonymity because we're sitting there, and you got people walking by, and oh yeah, they know what's going on there. I don't try to hide it, but I don't go around and flaunt it either. That's not what it's about. And also, the priest, when somebody in the parish has trouble with alcohol, he calls upon me. So, but no, I really truly believe the two are separate. It's 11th step. It's how I work my 11th step. I incorporate those things in my 11th step. But when I'm in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm at a meeting, I don't talk about religion. It's just, I truly don't believe it belongs. Just simply because there's so much controversy when you start getting down to separate religions. And we're all inclusive in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's atheists in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Right.
And there's not a requirement to be a Catholic to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. So.
No, but to be clear, I don't think they presented themselves as an AA meeting per se. They were Catholic men, to my knowledge, who were members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would meet together where they could merge the two or melt the two. I was just kind of curious because of your very clear devotion, if you'd ever heard of such a thing or participated in it. So
no.
I guess the answer's no.
The only thing I will say with the Cursillo, I brought that up because many, many alcoholics have been a part of that. So, but again, that's a separate thing too.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan.
What's a Cursillo? Thank you.
I second that.
Well, you know what? A Cursillo is, start out in the Catholic Church, it's a short weekend of Christianity. That's what it is. In a nutshell, that's what it is. But there's so much more to it than just saying something like that. And someday you may get invited, and if you do get invited, I would suggest you say yes.
I could dominate the room if you allow me to. You know, it's really not. Anyway, have you, Todd, in your experience, how have you had sponsees, you know, pigeons, resistant to forming a relationship with God, or atheist, or, you know, something that doesn't meld with your expression of spirituality? How do you work that out with them? What do you direct them to maybe read or do? How do you work that with them?
You know, that's a really good question. And to answer your question, yes, I have had pigeons who were very resistant against God, the God concept whatsoever. I'm not there to force anything down anybody's throat. it always has worked best for me to share my experience, my strength, and my hope. And when I'm able to do that in a way that's not condescending or looking down on somebody because they don't believe as I do, it's funny how over time they do grasp onto this beautiful program. Somehow, some way, without my help, they grasp onto a God of their understanding. That's just been my experience. If I don't force or demand that they believe this is what works for me. I need to remember that the steps are suggested. They're not have-tos, although I would suggest you would work the steps to stay sober the same. If you jumped out of a plane, I'd suggest you pull the parachute for the same reasons, too. So, but all I do is share. I've had the best luck, the best results when I share my experience, my strength, and my hope, and try to encourage them to find a God of their understanding. That just seems to work best for me.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Very much.
Thank you.
I think that does it for time, so thank you, Todd.
Thank you, everybody.